You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. This is The Conversation, and I am so grateful that you are tuning in, and I can't believe that it is now August. It is August. Fall is getting closer. The time when our kids go back to school is just a few weeks away, and on that note, I can just hear some of you parents rejoicing. I know for my wife and I, we have had an amazing summer with our kids. Honestly, I think it's the best summer ever that I've had as a dad, and yet my wife and I, Beck and I, we are excited about our kids going back to school and having a routine once again. But I hope you've had an awesome summer so far. I'm grateful that you're tuning in. And in today's conversation, I connected with Scott Harrison. Scott is the founder of an organization called Charity Water, an organization that helps provide safe, clean drinking water all around the world. And I was honored and pumped to connect with Scott. And I just want to share, before we get to the conversation, two things that stuck out to me. The first thing is this: Scott's relationship with Jesus led him to action. Now, just to say it, Scott doesn't talk much about Jesus throughout our conversation, and yet it is a core, essential part of who he is. It's the why behind so much of what he actually does. And so he doesn't talk a lot about Jesus during our episode and our conversation, but it is the why behind so much of what he's all about. And I just want to ask, if you're a follower of Jesus, and no problem if you're not, I'm honored. If you're not a Christian, I am jacked that you're tuning in. But for all of us followers of Jesus, I just want to ask, does your relationship with Jesus lead you to action? Does your relationship with Jesus cause you to serve other people? Does your relationship with Jesus lead you to care about the poor? Does it lead you to care about anyone other than yourself? Because it should, okay? Like, it absolutely should lead you to action. And honestly, if you want to be used by God, if you want to be used to tell the people around you about Jesus, I just want to challenge you to let your walk with Christ lead you to action. Because when our lives and our actions begin to look like Jesus, people will be drawn to the Jesus inside of us. It challenged me big time that Scott's relationship with Jesus led him to action. That's the first thing. The second thing is just his creativity. How he harnessed what he had known, how he harnessed his past experience and his gifting to use that for good. I just as he shares his story, I'm just blown away. I'm like, how he harnesses his creativity and his marketing skills to be used by God to be the hands and feet of Jesus. That's the second thing that just stuck out to me big time. And I just wonder, what has God given us? What creativity and experience and talents and giftings has God given us that he wants us to use to be the hands and feet of Jesus? What is he given us that he wants to use for his glory, not ours? So often when it comes to our relationship with Jesus, we set aside all these gifts, all this creativity, because it's like, gosh, I'm not really supposed to use that as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus. Yes, you should. The creator of the universe through the Holy Spirit lives inside of us. We should be the most creative people on the face of the earth. People should look at Christians. People should look at the church and say, oh my gosh, how do they do the things they do business-wise? How do they do the things they do nonprofit-wise? How do they do the things they do as people, as churches? How do they do the things they do? And so, there's so much that I could share. I'm excited for you to hear Scott's story. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I'm here with Scott Harrison. Scott, want to welcome you to the conversation today. A huge honor to connect with you.
Thanks, Adam. This will be fun. What are we talking about?
Yeah, well, I want to get back to 2006. It's hard to believe it's been this many years, but years back, you founded Charity Water. Tell us the story for the person who's never heard it before, how this all came to be.
Well, I got to start a little earlier, although I will say the last year has felt like 20 years. It's just me. But I was born in Philadelphia into a middle-class family. My dad was a business guy. My mom was a writer. And when I was four, there was a carbon monoxide gas leak in our home. And we all almost died. My dad and I bounced back because we were only sleeping in the house. My mom was unpacking boxes and she was there 24/7. And she passed out and was never the same again. And at 4 years old, kind of, you know, the first big moment in my life was my mom becoming an invalid with a broken, kind of an irreparably broken immune system. So that put me into a caregiver role as a kid. I'm helping to do the cooking and the cleaning, and I'm taking her to doctors as I grow up, and I'm trying to help my dad out. And my parents had a very deep Christian faith, so they raised me in the church. I played piano every Sunday. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't cuss. I didn't sleep around. You know, I took care of mom, and I wanted to be a doctor to help people like her one day. You know where this is going. So, you know, that was 0 to 18. Then 18, I moved to New York City, and I say, wouldn't it be fun to do the exact opposite and see how that feels? So I learned there was this extraordinary job in New York City called a nightclub promoter. And if you wanted to rebel, you could do so in style by effectively partying for a living. And I jumped all in. I wanted to become the greatest nightclub promoter New York City had ever seen. And I worked at 40 different clubs over the next 10 years and went all in. And these are, you know, these are clubs at the high end, models, celebrities, musicians, fashion parties. You know, we're selling $1,000 bottles of champagne that cost us $40. You know, we're selling $20 cocktails that cost 20 cents to make. And, you know, maybe no surprise, I pick up every single vice you would imagine might come with a decade and 40 nightclubs. And thankfully, maybe no surprise, start having some health issues. My nightclub business partner's like, bro, like, no wonder, you know, you go to bed at 1 p.m. You know? Like, you have dinner at 11 p.m. Like, you know, no wonder, dude, you're sick. And I think, you know, in a much more sober way, I had been living like I was going to live forever. And I was kind of confronted with mortality. What if I was sick? What if I had a brain tumor? You know, I had these inexplicably numb, like half my body just went numb.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe a metaphor there. But I just said, man, if I die now, like, I'm like the worst degenerate sycophant that I know. You know, my tombstone's going to read, here lies Scott Harrison, who's gotten a million people wasted. I mean, that was the crowning achievement of my life and career, was just getting people drunk night after night. So, you know, I have a pretty radical, you know, 180 about face. I, you know, I'm down on my knees. I'm like, God, take me back. You know, I want to come home. I'm like, you know, the prodigal. And I, you know, I'm an Enneagram 8. So it was pretty easy. I sold everything I owned. And I said, I'm going to start life over at 28 years old. And I'm going to go find the opposite path of my life. And that led me to, we're getting to charity water, Adam.
No, this is great. This is great.
It led me to a humanitarian mission as a volunteer in Liberia, West Africa, right after a brutal 14-year civil war had ended. So, you know, I go from the nightclubs, spraying champagne from, you know, the DJ booth, Jay-Z at table one, you know, Puff Daddy at table three. You know, we're sitting at table two thinking we're, you know, the coolest people in the world. And I wind up in a country weeks later after this about face, a country with no electricity, no running water, no sewage system, no mail, that had just come out of a 14-year terrible civil war. And I was with a group of doctors and surgeons, a group called Mercy Ships. I signed up as their volunteer photojournalist. And, you know, long story short, I saw poverty for the first time. I, you know, just kind of got wrecked. I was surrounded by these amazing, compassionate, high integrity medical professionals that were, you know, giving their time and talent in service of others, and effectively their money as well.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with the work. And the year that I signed up for stretched into 2 years. And,
you know, much longer story there, but I discovered that the reason so many people were sick was because they just didn't have water to drink. Half the country was drinking disgusting water. Half of the people living in that country were drinking dirty, unsafe, contaminated water. And half of the disease in the country was because of dirty water and a lack of just sanitation and hygiene. So I really came to the issue at 30 years old, which is now 15 years ago, you know, through this kind of medical lens, through a 2-year experience serving, telling stories, experiencing, you know, kind of a world through the eyes of doctors, and said, you know, the number one most important thing people need to be healthy is clean water. And then I came back at 30 years old and started Charity Water.
Yeah. So you see the need, it turns your world upside down. So you come back, you start Charity Water. How? Like, what? Share that.
Broke. That didn't help because, first of all, nightclub promoters are not very good at saving. And any money I had, I gave to Mercy Ships and the people that I'd met in Africa, you know, over those couple of years. So I come back and I'm literally living on a closet floor for free rent in New York City. But I have such a clear idea of what I want to accomplish before I die, which, you know, Adam, was actually to bring clean water to every human being alive, bring clean water to everybody on the planet. And, you know, as we record,
go for it.
185 million humans away from mission accomplished. So 1 out of 10 people alive, as people are listening or watching right now, doesn't have clean water to drink. Yes, twice the population of America around the world drinking dirty water today, you know, at risk of disease and death. So I had this kind of like, that's crazy, not on my watch. This is my holy discontent. Like, I'm gonna try to build an organization to do something about this. And you know, I have the advantage, Adam, of like, you know, first of all, nobody was even using the term social entrepreneur. I think that's like 5 years old. So this is 15 years ago. But I just knew everyday people that worked at MTV or the Sephora or Chase Bank. And I realized that so many of my friends were really cynical and skeptical when it came to charity. And to accomplish something as gargantuan as ending the global water crisis, as bringing clean water to every human being alive, I would need to do charity a little different. I would need to build an organization that maybe spoke to some of the objections that my friends, the cynics had. So, you know, I kind of went into, you know, I guess entrepreneur business model ideation mode and said, well, what are the problems people have with charities? Well, the first thing I kept hearing was, I don't know where my money goes. I said, well, what if we could create a business model where 100% of all donations we would ever accept would go directly to help people get clean water? 100% of all donations would go directly to build these water projects. And in a separately audited bank account, we would raise all that overhead separately. So that was kind of my first big idea. Just tell everybody if they give $1 or $1 million, all of it goes straight to the field. The second idea was just to use technology to prove to people what we did with their money and the impact that it had. And, you know, the first tool that I kind of used was Google Earth and then Google Maps. So we became the first charity just to put every completed well and water point around the world up transparently for the public to see. So they could see the satellite images of these projects as they were built and the photos and the details of the communities.
Amazing.
So proof kind of became this second pillar. And then, you know, the third pillar was really, I wanted to build an epic, imaginative, inspiring brand. I wanted to build the Nike or the Apple or the Virgin of charities, you know, not a shame and guilt based system that made people feel guilty and then coerced them to give, but, you know, radically inspired them to give. And, you know, that would be storytelling, the use of design and creative and, you know, video and later virtual reality and, you know, a bunch of the things that we've done to kind of, you know, to build that brand. And then the most important thing is what we wouldn't do, which is we wouldn't send guys like me from New York City to Uganda or Cambodia or Nepal we would work with the local partners in each of these countries. So we'd find and identify the local organizations. We'd build their capacity. We'd buy them drilling rigs. We'd help scale them up. But they would be leading the progress of their communities and their countries. And they'd be the ones getting the credit. So success for Charity Water would be kind of a small middle, a huge awareness raising, fundraising machine, and then thousands of local jobs being created around the world to actually do the work and get clean water in the hands or the mouths of people that needed it. So that was it. Give away 100%, prove where the money goes, build a killer brand, and work through the locals. And then day one, 15 years ago, I just threw a party in a nightclub and I charged people $20 to get in. And instead of pocketing the $15,000 in cash from the 700 people or so that came, took 100% of that money to a refugee camp in northern Uganda and built our first few projects and then proved them back to the 700 people that gave $20 and said, here's where your $20 went. You made clean water happen a world away. Doesn't that feel awesome? Don't you want to do more? And that's kind of the DNA. And, you know, we've been doing stuff like that for the last 15 years now.
Yes, Scott, insanely amazing. Just to celebrate, since 2006, share just some numbers if you know, like how much money has been given away, how many people have received clean water. Share that part of things.
Sure. Well, we're about $600 million raised. You know, the organization will raise about $100 million this year. And we're closing in on 15 million people served. So by the end of this year, I think we'll be a little shy in our 15 years. But, you know, that's about 800 Madison Square Gardens full of people, you know. So it's what, you know, 2+ years of sold out arena shows, just to kind of capture that. I will say, it's only about 1/61st or 1/62nd or so of the problem solved. So, you know, while 15 million people is a lot of people to help, it's, you know, it's a fraction of the global problem solved. So we're spending so much of our time now thinking about how do we scale the movement? How do we invite more people to participate? How do we grow our impact? So, you know, I would say, you know, $500 or $600 million is just the beginning. And, you know, I really think the best is yet to come.
With something so overwhelmingly huge, what keeps you going
well,
there?
I do like filling stadiums. So we help, this year we're helping about 5,000 new people get clean water every day. So, you know, I'll have a bad day and, you know, 11 Zoom meetings and like my eyes are bleeding and I hit the pillow, wake up the next day. And, you know, 5,000 people got clean water because of the effort of the team and our amazing donors and supporters all around the globe. You know, we would fill up my local stadium, you know, Madison Square Garden. We would fill up Staples Center every 3.5 days. A stadium full of people, you know, between about Monday and, you know, and Thursday at 10 o'clock every single week. So that keeps me going. You know, the impact. And then I'm just focused on how do we accelerate that process? How do we get more people to participate?
Oh, that's so good. So you got the book, Thirst, Story, Redemption, Compassion, and a Mission to Bring Clean Water to the World. Tell us what your main takeaway for the reader. Share about that.
Well, I wanted to write a little bit about my personal story because, I mean, if the most degenerate, I mean, it's never too late to change. It's never too late to find purpose or redemption. I mean, as you read this, I mean, you know, you'll hate me, at least in the first couple of chapters. I mean, you know, there was no more of a scoundrel, you know, short of killing somebody than the life that I was living. And yet I really did find purpose and faith. And now I'm kind of, you know, leading a global movement and we've raised $600 million from, you know, millions of people across 150 countries. So there was a little bit of the personal story because talk to me about a wayward child or, you know, people come up to me and say, I hate my job or, you know, I see all these problems in the world. I just don't know what to do. I feel paralyzed. You know, if a nightclub promoter can do it, like, you know, maybe that could give some people hope. I also wanted to, you know, tell the story of water. I mean, how many people are listening right now did not think about water once today? or certainly did not appreciate it. You know, thinking that, you know, 780 million people, right, a tenth of the world, they don't even know what it's like to wake up in the morning and, you know, put on the coffee or brush your teeth or take a shower or, you know, drink a glass of cold water or pop a bottle, you know, on the way to the gym or the yoga studio. They just don't have that. So I think it's also a story or many stories of water across many of the 69 countries where I've been able to travel, you know, the 50 times or so I've been able to go just to Africa. So I donated 100% of the book advance and all the proceeds. So it goes straight back to the organization. You know, I can never make a penny from the book, but, you know, it wound up doing well and becoming a New York Times bestseller and getting endorsed by Richard Branson and Bill Gates and Michael Bloomberg and all these kind of amazing people. And was in some ways kind of a surreal experience to just see, you know, when people write you letters and say, this was really meaningful, or they started a charity.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, they were inspired by the story in the book to many of them very different causes, you know, sex trafficking or hunger or shelter. So I think I wanted just to inspire others with the true story.
No, that's so good. And we'll have a link to the book Thirst. Go get a copy for yourself. Buy one for a friend. Scott, I got a couple kind of rapid fire questions for you. Not really rapid fire, but just questions that I want to ask with the rest of our time. We all want to make a difference. I mean, I think if you talk with anybody, they want to have impact. How do we do that? Like, what is, I mean, just for the banker, for the teacher, for the mechanic, like, I want to make a difference with my life.
I'm a big fan of, you know, giving. I think the more you give, the more you give. It's like a muscle that needs to be exercised. So, you know, I think you can give time, you can give your talents, your skills, and you can give money. And, you know, we try to give all three in our family. So I just think the more you look for ways to be useful, the more you look for ways to help in your local community, in your global community, the more you're blessed. You know, the freer you are, you don't become a slave to your possessions. You don't become a slave to the numbers and the bank accounts and kind of this grasping, this holding on, this sense of accumulation. And, you know, I need more, I need more, I need more. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of looking for ways to be generous and then just believing that the more you are generous, the more you want to be generous.
Oh, that's so good. And I often think, so often I look at my atheist brothers and sisters and they're looking more like Jesus and living his life out than we are. And so I think that's such a, everything you just shared is so good. Scott, I want to ask kind of a, you know, you have so many successes. There's so many accomplishments that you've made. Tell me about in recent times, last few years, has there been a failure that you've like, leadership wise, where you've just utterly failed, or what that's looked like for you and what you've learned from it?
This is going to sound so pedestrian, but our data, our CRM at Charity Water, our systems kind of a mess for many years. And it was just something that we, you know, that I never really prioritized early on as we were growing so quickly. You know, I'm a creative, I'm a futurist. I mean, I'm thinking 10 years ahead. And not on kind of that critical infrastructure. And that's really held us back and cost us a lot more money, you know, building that at scale, you know, while you're flying the plane than had, you know, I invested in that. So I think that's a mistake I made at year one and then again at year three and at year five and at year seven and at year 11. And now I'm kind of paying for it in years 13, 14, and 15, where we now have, you know, much more professional people who are good at that. But it's just a lot harder to do it. I mean, you know, there was a time when I think we had a million donors in like Excel spreadsheets, you know, because we hadn't picked our CRM. And that is, you know, I think that's really held us back in some ways. You know, another kind of regret is, you know, we took far too long to build a subscription giving program. And what we call the Spring now, which is our community, where Charity Water is seeing almost all of our growth. You know, think of that as Spotify or Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus for clean water. You know, instead of getting movies or TV, you know, or free shipping from Amazon every month as you give, 100% of the donations are going to help people get clean water, which we then kind of prove back and share stories. So, you know, that has taken the organization from a, you know, kind of 30-something $1 million a year organization to a $100 million a year organization, backed by tens of thousands of people around the world who are just showing up giving $30 a month, $40 a month, $10 a month. So I wish I had done that so much earlier. You know, I waited 10 years into Charity Water to launch that community. You could say that product, and you know, it's worked. And by the way, you know, as a call to action, if anybody is interested in learning more, that's the number one thing you could do right now is learn about the spring. You know, you can join in 20 seconds or less. But that is kind of the future of the org, not people kind of making big, you know, one-off gifts as much as this movement, this growing community of people who will show up faithfully fighting for change, you know, each and every month. So that's probably, you know, both a regret, but also what I'm most excited about for the future.
So how good was that? A huge thanks to Scott for being willing to come and share a part of his story with all of us. To find out more about Charity Water and how you can be a part of what Charity Water is doing, go to charitywater.org. I just want to challenge all of us, whether it's Charity Water or another amazing organization like Convoy of Hope, like Compassion, like Mission Haiti, I want to challenge you to get involved with one of these organizations that's making a huge difference all around the world. My wife, Beck, and I, we're passionate about Convoy, and we're passionate about Mission Haiti. And anytime that we have an opportunity to partner with one of these organizations, every time God just challenges us to jump in head first. So get involved. I want to end this time, though, with the question I started out with. For those of us who follow Jesus, I just want to ask, does your love for Jesus move you to action? Does your relationship with Jesus move you to action? If the answer is no, I just want to lightly and gently encourage you to take one step for that to become a reality in your life. Because when our lives begin to look like Jesus, people will be irresistibly drawn to the Jesus inside of us. And I pray that the Holy Spirit, the creator of all things, would dwell in us and he would equip us to utilize everything we've been given, gifts, talents, experience, that we'd be the most creative people on the face of the earth, bringing glory to his name, making a difference by being the hands and feet of Jesus. The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.